before you drink. What you get isn't always what you think.
Beers of Alaska, beer on the last frontier. Beers of Alaska, learn about them here.
Well, don't settle for the first, for it might be the worst.
Welcome to this month's Drinking on the Last Frontier. I'm your host, Phil Howell, here on KDLL 91.9 FM Kenai Soldotna, a listener-supported public radio for the Central Kenai Peninsula. And as always, thanks to Recess Duty for playing us in with our theme song. Well, it's wild days with the COVID-19 virus. We've got a lot of stories to talk about, so let's get started with news items. Obviously, the major story right now in the beer world and everywhere else is the outbreak of COVID-19. I'll be talking about this in detail later in the show. SB 52, the latest attempt to rewrite Alaska's alcohol laws, continues to wend its way through the legislature. Sponsored by State Senator Peter Michicki, the bill was approved by the Alaska Senate 19-0 on February 26th. And sent to the House for consideration, where it was referred to the Labor and Commerce Committee. That committee approved the bill on March 18th and forwarded it to the House Finance Committee. As I reported last month, the proposed bill contains a sort of grand compromise between bars and breweries. SB 52 would further restrict the number of new brewery tap rooms. This is accomplished by requiring a brewery's tap room to be licensed separately, and changing the population limit required for the issuance of a brewery taproom license from 1 per 3,000 residents to 1 per 12,000 residents. In return, existing taprooms will be allowed to stay open until 10 p.m., 2 hours later than currently permitted, and can host 4 music concerts per year, something currently banned. Breweries also will be permitted to host some public events like art shows and fundraisers. Dancing in tap rooms will no longer be banned, and other restrictions on entertainment will be relaxed. The 1,200-barrel-per-year distribution limit on brew pubs would also be eliminated, allowing them to sell unlimited amounts to their distributors. Both the Brewers Guild of Alaska and the Alaska Cabaret Hotel Restaurant and Retailers Association, also known as CHAR, have agreed to the new language and appear to be ready to oppose any amendments that might threaten to derail the bill. Clearly, the one thing current brewers and bar owners can both agree on is the desirability of altering state laws to prohibit any new competitors from trying to start up. Too bad there was no one to represent the citizens of Alaska and what they wanted when this grand compromise is being hammered out, because from where I sit, they're the ones who are losing out. At the Rondi Beer Fest on March 7th in Anchorage, On-Site Brewing Company and Double Shovel Cider Company tied for Best in Show, while last year's winner, Girdwood Brewing Company, took second place. On February 24th, Beer Advocate founder Todd Ahlstrom announced that Beer Advocate had been purchased by the parent company of the Untappd Beer app. Here's what he had to say, quote, "I'm excited to announce that Beer Advocate and Untappd have joined forces under the Next Glass umbrella. Beer Advocate will maintain its distinct brand identity and continue as its own community, website, series of events, and beyond. We've been struggling to keep the lights on for over 2 years, and we still face some challenges, but I'm confident that this is the best path for all of us. Next Glass is committed to not only helping Beer Advocate, but passionate about protecting and cultivating our unique culture, identity, and community. I also have a lot of respect for what Greg Avola, Untappd's co-founder and CTO, and team have built over the past 9 years, and this next chapter is a great opportunity to explore new futures and opportunities. Untappd brings over 100 talented co-workers, killer app development, and powerful sales and insights to the table. Beer Advocate brings nearly a quarter century of advocating for beer, the benchmark for beer reviews, an awesome community, the Internet's largest beer forum, a decade of publishing experience, and award-winning content, over 70 world-class beer events, and our Respect Beer motto. Together, under one banner, Beer Advocate and Untappd will explore ways to collaborate, strengthen both communities, and provide unmatched resources for its users and the industry. Beer Advocate has been struggling ever since the seat's publication of its monthly print beer magazine. Alaskan Brewing Company announced in early March that it was launching a new limited release series. The first of the series, Hazy Bay Juicy IPA, a citrusy and tropical fruit explosion of hops and drinkability based on the New England IPA beer style, is now available in stores. We've brewed a few hazy IPAs in the past couple of years, and we think this one has a really nice balance of juicy hops flavor and smooth drinkability, said Alaskan Brewing Director of Sales and Marketing Merv Boyce. Our new limited release series allows us to experiment with new styles and ingredients and get products out quickly to our consumers. Hazy Bay Juicy IPA is brewed with a variety of hops, including Mosaic, Citra, and Sultana, which are all high in juicy and citrus flavors. The hops are heavily used in the dry hop stage with two dry hopping additions during fermentation. Soft mouthfeel is in part due to the use of Alaska-grown white wheat from Vanderweil Farms in Palmer, Alaska. Quote, Hazy Bay Juicy IPA is the first of our new limited release lineup, which will be in the market for just a few months before the next beer comes on board, said Boyce. Our consumers are asking us for variety, and this series is a key place where they will find that. We're targeting midsummer for the release of our refreshing and easy-drinking new Fireweed Blonde. Fireweed Blonde comes in at 4.5% alcohol by volume and is a perfect beer for the warmer summer days, with a light body and just a touch of honey to balance the slight hop bitterness. The beer pays tribute to the distinctive bright purple fireweed blossoms that mark the late summers throughout Alaska. As summer winds down, consumers can look for a brand new IPA from Alaskan Stratosphere, a Strata-hopped IPA. Strata hops are known for their tropical fruit and citrus flavors and aromas with a light herbal note. Another change for this series will be its availability in cans and draft only, making these beers the choice for consumers looking to get outdoors with a cold one. Quote, more and more consumers are preferring craft beer in cans. When we developed this new line of experimental beers, the decision to release it in cans was a no-brainer, Boyce said. With bold flavors and greater drinkability, I can see our consumers enjoying any of these beers after a day of hiking, skiing, fishing, or any of the activities Alaskan drinkers love to engage in, end quote. Hazy Bay Juicy IPA will be sold through midsummer to be followed by Fireweed Blonde, with Stratosphere IPA making its appearance in autumn. Poll of the readers of craftbeer.com, the website of Brewers Alliance, has again selected Prospector's Historic Pizzeria and Ale House as the Great American Beer Bar for Alaska in 2020. Quote, you know a great beer bar when you're in one. There's something about the beer menu, the food, the service, the atmosphere, and sitting shoulder to shoulder with other beer lovers who were drawn there for the same reasons, said Jess Baker, editor-in-chief, craftbeer.com. Great beer bars like the ones our readers nominate are instrumental in growing this wonderful community that celebrates small and independent U.S. craft brewers. Alaskan Brewing Company has chosen Juneau Mountain Rescue as the beneficiary of proceeds from its fundraising efforts for 2020. Every year since 2002, Alaskan Brewing has turned to its employees to select a local nonprofit partner. Quote, it's important to us to give back to the community where we get to live and brew, and there are many worthy organizations here in Juneau, said Alaskan Brewing co-founder Marcy Larson. We send a list of local nonprofits to our brew crew at the beginning of the year, and they vote for the organizations they would like us to support in the coming year. Past partners include the Alaska Network on Domestic Violence and Sexual Assault, the National Alliance on Mental Illness, Hospice of Juneau, and Gastineau Humane Society. Last year, Helping Hands, a local organization that provides food to Juneau families in need, was their nonprofit partner. The total amount raised for Helping Hands in 2019 was $23,037. Helping Hands is a small volunteer-run operation, so we were thrilled to be able to make a donation with the potential to make a big impact on their efforts, explained Larson. The brewery presented Helping Hands with a donation check during a celebration and toast at their tasting room in late February. On February 25th, the shareholders of the Craft Brew Alliance voted to approve the sale of the company to Anheuser-Busch InBev. According to a press release, more than 98% of the shares who voted by proxy and at the special meeting were in favor of the deal, including a majority of outstanding shares held by investors other than AB or related interests. Today's decisively positive shareholder vote brings us even closer to cementing our expanded partnership with Anheuser-Busch, CBA Chief Executive Officer Andy Thomas said in a press release. For more than 25 years, our two companies have been working together to enrich the beer landscape with the highest quality craft beer offerings, and we're excited to build on that strong foundation and satisfy more consumers as one combined company. The transaction still must meet regulatory approval, and the companies say the deal is expected to close in 2020. CBA's brands include Kona, Widmer Brothers, Red Hook, Cisco, Square Mile Cider, Wynwood Brewing, Omission, Appalachian Mounting Brewery, and PH Experiment. If the transaction wins regulatory approval, these brands will join the Brewers Collective, AB's craft division, which includes Goose Island, Elysian, Ten Barrel, Golden Road, Carbach, and Wicked Weed, among others. Anchorage Brewing Company received several awards from the Rate Beer website. The brewing company was selected as one of the top breweries in the world and as the top brewery in Alaska. It also won Best Beer in Alaska for its deal with the Devil Triple Oak Barley Wine, Best White IPA for its Galaxy IPA, and Best Barley Wine for a deal with the Devil Double Oak. That's it for this month's news. Coming up, we'll have interviews and a discussion of the COVID-19's impact on the craft brewing industry. This is KDLL 91.9 FM, Kenai Soldotna, and we'll be right back.
Hello, and welcome to Drinking on the Last Frontier. I'm your host, Bill Howell, here on KDLL 91.9 FM, Kenai Soldotna. And today we have a great pleasure of interviewing John Burkett, formerly with Odom Distributors and currently the territory sales manager for the Country Malt Group. John, thank you so much for taking time to talk with us. Appreciate it.
You bet.
Tell us about a distributor, because I think a lot of our listeners probably don't have a really grasp of the three-tier system and what that means. And so if you could talk to them about what a distributor does and how the whole system works, that would be great.
Yeah, a lot of distributors get a bad rap in the system, in the link, especially with new small breweries, but they really do serve an integral part in the whole system. And it started obviously after Prohibition, when states got to pick what they wanted to do with laws, but they wanted to keep monopolies from happening again. So they had a division between the manufacturer, the distribution, and the retail sales. Now, obviously, with brew pubs and the latest things, those lines have kind of been blurred. But the part that they play in particular is making sure that the product gets to the retail shelves or tap lines in a quality that the brewer intended, which means fresh, in date, you know, rotated, if it's packaging, you know, looking correct. And one of the things that distributors do is make sure that lines are clean. Now in Alaska, the distributors do that. They have a team that goes out and cleans the lines or places the lines when they start looking bad. Other states, they have to hire them out, but in this state, they do them internally. So the quality of the beer that comes out of the tap, and in fact, New Belgium Brewery, which took me 17 years of begging to bring to the state, they really upped the game on that. They require, instead of kind of the pump jug system that you would see around. You have to have a pneumatic pump, and they have a quality control team that goes around the country and does inspections, and they'll swab the faucet. They'll check the date. There's a log in a cooler on when things were cleaned. They'll check the condition of the line. So it's very, very serious. Again, what the brewer intended is what they want the public to try. And if somebody has a bad beer, they may not buy it again. And as part of that, so you go to, you know, any of the retail liquor stores and you find old beer in the market, it's the responsibility of the distributor to pick that up and rotate it out. And that's something that they essentially eat. It's one of the services. So, you know, delivery, rotating, keeping stock shelves, the shelves stocked, that's all a distributor that does that. I mean, most of the retailers now have a clerk at the cash register, and they don't stock the shelves. They don't do anything. They don't rotate. You know, there's some exceptions to that, obviously, but that's a key part. And how we decide on what comes to the state. Well, I did this. I started with Odom like 91. So this was kind of at the infancy of craft beer. I started bringing craft beer up here because I liked it. And I was actually corporate operations manager. So I dealt with warehousing and drivers and trucks and all that kind of stuff. But I had a passion for craft beer. So I started going to the Great American Beer Festival in the early 90s in Denver and trying different beers and visiting Colorado breweries in particular and meeting brewers. And in those days, in fact, one of my favorite stories is I had always gone down there and loved Avery beer. And in those days, there weren't a lot of different beers. In fact, they really had three. And their brewery was one little bay in a strip industrial center in a bigger way, similar to the old Midnight Sun where they used to be. This just was a bigger industrial center, but they had no more space than Midnight Sun at the beginning. And so I fell in love with Hog Heaven. And every time I'd go down there, I'd bring some home. And then several friends would go to Colorado and they'd bring some home. And then one year I decided I wanted to try all the IPAs made in Colorado that I possibly could in a week. And I decided that the good old Avery IPA, back when IPAs were a solid 45 IBUs, that they made the best one. So I go to JBF and I'm walking around with my good friend Greg Cook, one of the founders of Stone, and which I brought to the state when they were, I think, 3 years old. I can't remember exactly. And Greg goes, "Have you met Adam Avery?" I said, "No, I love his beers, but, you know, no, never met him." So he introduced me and we started talking about beer. And this was before the liquid bans. And I told him on how I loved Hog Heaven and always brought it home in a suitcase. And he goes, "Why don't we just expletive sell it up there?" And I go, "That'll work. It'll save in my suitcase and a handshake. That's all there was to it." And so for years, I would go to JBF and then to the Craft Brewers Conference and, again, meet brewers. I didn't even deal with salespeople. I'd meet brewers. I met, like, Sam from Dogfish Head and, you know, just on and on and on. And I love these beers, and we could figure a way to get them up here and keep them fresh and rotated. Now, that's the key point. And then some were very hard to get. Like I mentioned, the Belgian brewery took me 17 years to get because they're so particular and they wanted to have an infrastructure. The first one I brought up, big one, was Deschutes. But at the time, they just had a pub and we got 15 kegs of Black Butte Porter out of the pub, whether we needed it or not. And built it to, at least a couple years ago, was the number one selling out of state or lower 48 beer in Alaska. But in the case of Dogfish Head, it was very hard to get, and it was kind of funny. You know, people would say, "Oh, we want to get it," but it's a small amount of people that a lot of them were homebrewers, so they didn't buy a ton. So I'd get 60-minute or 90-minute or whatever up here, 20 cases at a time, and it wouldn't sell through. It would get old. And it got harder and harder to get. One time I did get a pallet of 120, which was the entire allocation for the state of Washington. And I got the same thing, and I had to buy it through a distributor in Washington. It was kind of upset that we got just as much. And of course that sold, and the shelf life wasn't important, but you know, others were. Another good example of that is Firestone Walker, one of my very favorite breweries. I've had the opportunity to stay at David Walker's ranch in a guest house. Absolutely love their beer, but it doesn't sell through in Alaska. It just doesn't. And it just irritates me, because I would love today to go out and be able to, you know, get almost any of theirs. I think Luponic Distortion is relatively around in some of their specialties, but if you're going to bring it up from the lower 48, it's got to be able to sell.
Well, let me ask you a question about that. Why do you think some of those weren't selling? Was it just that people didn't recognize it, that people prefer the local breweries, or, you know, for something like Firestone Walker or whatever? What do you think was the issue there?
I think in the case of the original Dogfish Head, when I brought it up, and I can't remember. And I think in the case of it, people didn't know it. The ones in like our local brew club and the homebrewers certainly knew Dogfish, but the general public didn't. And it's hard if you want to get distribution in any of the chain stores. You know, it's got to move or they'll pull it out. And of course, if it doesn't stay fresh, you don't want it there anyway. I mean, people like Abadega would carry it, and your store down there in Kenai, where Ben is, Country Liquor. I mean, there's such a good account, Grog Shop and Homer. But, it wasn't enough. And of course, now it just returned. Odom was able to get it back this last February. So now it's here, and it's probably gaining strength. In the case of Firestone Walker, I think people, even though it's one of the biggest breweries in the country, I think people just didn't really know it. One of the problems was their flagship DBA is a English style bitter, which just, you know, make your IPA, you know, in your face, nasty, hoppy, but don't call it bitter. And then it kind of fell into the amber category, which is dead, dead, dead. So that didn't help it. And then with the rise of local breweries, you know, the good or the bad, the local breweries have really killed a lot of the beers from the lower 48. And I mean, that's not necessarily a bad thing, but it's, you know, a reality if you want to have something a little different. So, I mean, there's a lot of things that go into why a distributor. I was lucky in the 90s. I could go pick anything I wanted to, meet the owner. In fact, the first two that I brought up were T.W. Fisher's out of Coeur d'Alene, because I had met their owner hanging out in Coeur d'Alene. But, I mean, by the time it got here, the quality control of that brewery was horrible. And then the other one at the same time was Breckenridge. And I love that beer. And Richard Squire, the owner, was an absolute lunatic. And when we agreed with a handshake in his pub by Coors Field that we would bring it up, he came up for one of the very first. In fact, it was called the Microbrewery Invitational at the Egan before it became the Barley Wine Festival. And I kept bringing it, but it just didn't work well. People, again, didn't know what it was. And in those days, the big sellers were Pete's and Sam Adams and Alaskan, of course, and not a lot else. Well, I really felt bad when I had to tell Richard it just wasn't working. And he said, well, my accountants will love it, because he was subsidizing the freight. And he lost money on every single case, but he just sent it up here because I wanted it. So I was lucky enough to grow up in the business with all these wonderful owners of breweries all over the country that now have just become legends in the industry. But now it's harder and harder. It's really difficult to be a distributor now. The shelf space isn't getting bigger. And the tap handles, you figure what, there's 35 breweries or so in the state. And if an account has 24 tap handles, you know, there's a lot that aren't going to make it, and certainly everybody's going to have one handle. I always tried with the local breweries, you know, just let me have one handle and rotate it around and keep it fresh. And that's the other problem, too. Everybody wants what's new and different. I mean, I'm just as bad. You know, I use the Untappd app, And I want what's new and different that I've never had before. But any brewery, lower 48 or local, a lot of them rely on their flagship brands to keep going, but nobody wants that anymore.
That's the whole idea behind Flagship February, right? I know I did that this year. I went back and revisited some of those beers that maybe I haven't drunk as much lately as I really should have. They still taste just as good as ever.
It's good to go back and do that. And I do it once in a while to what used to be my go-to beers. And it's like, wow, you know, I forget how good they are. But it's still really exciting for everything that's going on in the industry and all the new breweries coming up and things that are new and different. So, you know, it's not a bad thing.
Well, let's shift gears for a bit and let's talk about your new livelihood, working for Country Malt.
That worked out perfectly. I retired from Odom just a little over 3 years ago and really did not want to leave the beer industry. I mean, it's a lot of fun. All my friends have been in it. I mean, I've essentially been in the beer business 40 years, and which is longer than most of the people I deal with now have been alive. But it's a great business, and what's kind of, you know, fun, sort of, that's not the right word, but in today's climate with the COVID-19 and things hunkering down, beer is still considered an essential business. And, you know, the liquor stores are open, the breweries mostly are open to go, and Country Malt Group is open because we supply an essential product. So I was just lucky. A friend of mine that I had known forever, over 20 years, he used to be our Deschutes rep back in the early days, over 20 years ago. We had kept our friendship from when he left Deschutes, and he worked for Duvel. In fact, he got me a really, really VIP tour, Duvel in Belgium. And so he'd been with Country Malt Group for, 10 years or whatever, living in New Jersey. And he wanted to come up to the Barley Wine Festival and see if he could see some brewers, because there wasn't a rep up here. There was a guy that would call once in a while, and I think every several years he was out of Canada, he would come up, but didn't really have a rep. So I said, sure, come on up. I said, I'm going to retire right after the Barley Wine Festival this year, looking for something to do part-time. And, you know, it was silent, and it took 6 months to put it together because I'm the only one in all of North America that essentially is an outside commission-only contractor. I'm not a full-on employee. But, I mean, I only have to deal with Alaska. So most of my full-on employee counterparts, you know, on the Canada side, deal with several provinces. On the U.S. side, they're three or four states. So it's kind of nice to deal with one state and 35 breweries and a few homebrew stores. So we are a one-stop shopping for the brewing or homebrew industry. So we sell mostly barley and hops. That's the main thing we do. We own Great Western Malt in Vancouver, Washington, Canada Malt all over Canada, Baird's in Scotland. And we're tied into a big corporation out of Australia. But we're essentially North America. But we also do chemicals. We do equipment, just about anything you would need in a brewery. And we have a homebrew division. It was called Brewcraft. I'm not sure what it's called now. But it's fun. And I knew most of the brewers up here anyway. So it's kind of fun to go hang out and help them. And the one thing that I bring to the table a little bit is because of my distributor background, I have taken, Ted at Turnigan in particular, and I've known Ted a long time as a home brewer and a bass player. And so I would take him out to, like Sweet 100 and Kinley's and the buyer at Brown Jug, even before he opened, and introduce him to the key buyers in town, all of which, of course, loved his beer and now carry his beer. So, and I said, well, I'm doing that because not only are we friends, the more beer you sell, the more grain you buy. So I've been able to do that with several different breweries. So that's been kind of a fun part in it. And it's just, I'm not used to that. I mean, long time ago, I ran Anaheim Stadium concessions and was a huge beer buyer, and that got me into the distributorship. This was in Southern California, which brought me to Alaska. So as a retailer, then distributor, and now the commodities, it's a whole different thing. When I walk into a brewery, I'm not thinking of finished goods and what it looks like on a shelf. I'm looking at things way differently when I walk into a brewery, and have been able to do, like, last month before the thing shut down, I was in Montreal at the Lelabon yeast factory, and I had no concept where yeast came from. And it's like walking into a huge brewery with fermenters and heat exchangers, and except they're peeling off sheets of yeast. And I mean, it was just an amazing thing to see. Plus going in the grain and going into the malt plants. And I've been lucky enough to be at Hop Harvest in Yakima. And boy, is that a whole different world. I mean, there's millions and millions of dollars of equipment that they use 20 days a year. And they're multi-generations. Most of the guys down in Yakima are 4 generations, 5 generation hop growers. The malt people are the same. We represent an English malt called Thomas Fawcett. That's 7th generation maltsters. We have a German one called Best Malts that they're 3rd generation. So it's incredible that this is a commodity. These are farmers that I'm now dealing with, and dealing with grain as a commodity, and weather is a factor. And, you know, crops are all different, and how they, you know, make them come out the same.
That's something that's I've always thought was, I don't know if I would call it a superiority, but something about beer that's very different from wine, because with beer, you can't excuse the variability in your end product with the variability in your base that you start with. You know, in the wine world, you could say, oh, it was a bad year for the grapes. It was a bad year for barley. That's why my beer this year doesn't taste so good. No, you're expected to make it work. The maltster, like you guys, you're expected to produce quality barley regardless. And the brewer is supposed to take that malt and make quality beer. And no excuses will be accepted.
Very true. I was told years and years ago, because at Odom, I also dealt with the fine wine division. I was told, and I love doing events with cork dorks because, you know, they're an open sponge. And I always tell them, you know, things, blasphemous things like beer pairs better with cheese than wine. You know, wine is made in the field and beer is scientifically done in a brewery. And it is amazing. And the thing about the hop field that got me, here's these multi-generations and millions of dollars with equipment. Well, you go out in the experimental fields with the Peralt Farms, a lot of the Citroen Mosaic and all the new stuff is all Jason Peralt's family. And you go out there and each plant, you know, was whatever, 8-10 feet tall, and each one is different. And he'll say, just run through there, pull the cones, rub them, you know, smell them. And it takes 10 years from the initial beginning of an idea of a hop you're going to try until it makes it to market. I mean, talk about investment. And then maybe it works and maybe it doesn't. So it's an amazing to see the commodity side and farmers. So you have a whole new respect for farmers when dealing with hop growers and malt farmers or barley farmers. Yep.
Well, John, hey, I want to thank you so much for taking the time to talk to us today. Appreciate it. This is Drinking on the Last Frontier on KDLL 91.9 FM, Kenai Soldotna. We'll be right back with our next segment.